The dollar is at its highest in what, 24 years or something against the American dollar?
It is, up through 96, you know, when you have close to the world's highest interest rates in the developed world. And you have a set of Reserve Bank minutes that come out which say, we thought very seriously about jacking up interest rates last month.
But we didn't.
But we didn't. But we thought very seriously and we talked about it long and hard.
So think about that,
think
people.
About that. And then you have the Secretary of the Treasury, Ken Henry, giving a 40-minute speech today passionately defending inflation targeting for the Reserve Bank at 2 to 3%. And you have a WIMP's budget coming out of Canberra which was not what was needed to fight inflation, i.e. only very mild spending cuts. And all of that points to higher interest rates. And the stock market's recovered half its losses. Mm. I mean, it went back through 6,000 this week. The stock market peaked at, you know, close to 6,800, got down to sort of 5,100 thereabouts.
Everyone was crying.
Everyone was crying. It was off 25%. Now it's recovered half. Full employment and all these new iron ore and coal deals. You know, coal prices up 200%. China pumping an extra $35 billion a year into Australia, the best ever, biggest ever terms of trade improvement in our history. It all points to an economy running right.
It does.
And
no
higher interest
people
rates.
Buying in there. Just on the China situation, has there been any fallout from the earthquake in terms of the commodities boom?
No.
Can you expect that?
No. I think that, if anything, it's more demand for more rebuilding. So I think the overall implications are far more humanitarian and social and media and those issues. I think in terms of their economy, it just seems to be an incredible juggernaut. But look, I guess it was such a disaster. And, you know, in Australia, you'd have a massive inquiry which would reveal all this shoddy building practices and you'd have massive new laws come through. But this isn't Australia, this is China. And so you won't get those investigations, you won't get the transparency. And
So demand will just be there for rebuilding product.
Yeah.
And that's what we've got plenty of, well, at least the raw materials to make that.
Well, that's right. I mean, just looking at BHP and Rio Tinto, their share prices have been driving our market more than anything else. And if you look at the combined value of the two companies yesterday, it peaked at $505 billion. So the two of them were worth $505 billion yesterday. They're back to $498 billion today because they had a minor correction. But if you put the two together, that would be the world's second most valuable company, after Exxon.
Right.
So
my God.
Exxon last night was worth US $498 billion, and Australia today, BHP Rio today, is worth Australian $498 billion. So they're both worth the same figure. And then you've only got the currency conversion.
And of course, a tiny adjustment.
And that's right. And with the currency now through 96 cents. I know it's hypothetical because BHP hasn't taken over Rio Tinto yet, but there is a chance, if that takeover deal goes through, that we would have the world's biggest company run here out of Melbourne and its value totally driven by China. And the amazing list about looking at the top 12 most valuable companies in the world at the moment is that five of them are government-controlled, and that's PetroChina, the big Chinese oil company, Gazprom, the Russian gas monopoly, which has their new president as the chairman of the company, Dmitry Medvedev, China Mobile, Petrobras, which is the Brazilian oil monopoly, which is state-controlled but listed as well, worth US $295 billion, the big Chinese bank, ICBC, and then you get to General Electric, Microsoft, and then the three big privately owned oil plays, Shell, BP, and the French company Total.
So it's dominated, though, by
energy.
Energy. Thank you. Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. And you wonder, where is that going to in the future in terms of that being such a finite resource?
Well, you're right. Eight of the top 12 most valuable companies are now energy. But, you know, oil is the big one. And where does it go to? It means that there's a major tilting in world power and wealth at the moment to those that have the oil. And it's massively inflationary and recessionary in terms of we're all paying so much for oil. I mean, if you think about it, that if Exxon's worth $498 billion and Shell and BP have just, you know, announced annual profits of more than $20 billion, how much is Saudi Arabia worth?
Yes.
I mean, it's all, you know, government and royal family and stuff. But I mean, a lot of the property investment coming into Australia now is Middle Eastern, and they've just got all the cash, petro dollars, yeah.
Yep.
So, but it is very much inflationary for the punter, and it feeds through to the pensioners' complaints.
Because none of us can avoid that.
That's right.
And everyone is just completely tied to having to pay whatever. And people had already texted me today saying that it used to be that it would that petrol would go up on a certain day. Well, it looks like it's today. And why is diesel so expensive when, in fact, the dollar is on parity, etc. And everyone's anxious about that.
Well, it would
be
so much worse if our currency wasn't so strong. I mean, the dollar's doubled in 5 years, from 47 to 96. It's more than doubled. I can't recall it ever doing that before. And the other thing is about Australia is that we all talk about the amount of coal and iron ore we have, which is true. It's phenomenal. But we also have an amazing amount of gas, but we have very, very far, rapidly dwindling oil. So the government's budget that came out this week, they actually missed their oil tax revenue target by a couple of... This is not petrol tax. This is oil on say, the Bass Strait oil.
Right.
They cut that by $200 million because the production is falling so quickly in the Bass Strait, and we haven't got many other oil fields. But our gas is just everywhere, and we are becoming one of the great gas-rich nations. And the Northwest Shelf is now making profits of $10 billion a year on gas. It's one of the top five or six gas projects in the world. And no wonder the government this week could just go, bang, here's a $550 million tax hit to the Northwest Shelf, which is what they did when they closed off this excise. It was the second biggest revenue measure in the budget after the Alcopops thing at $640 million. And Woodside, which operates the Northwest Shelf and owns 16% of it, its shares have gone up like 10 or 15% this week. So it just shows how much money they are making, and it's only 10% Australian-owned, so all those profits are going offshore. But there's an interesting little gas play. I mean, gas is setting the whole Queensland market alight at the moment. We're seeing this massive takeover for Origin Energy. A big British company is trying to spend $14 billion buying up Origin Energy because of all their coal seam methane gas, all this gas which sits in the coal. And few people realise that we actually have arguably as much Northwest Shelf gas sitting under the ugly, dirty brown coal in the Gippsland Basin. We have an absolute pile of coal seam methane gas, the very same gas which is sending the stock market bananas in Queensland. And few people realise this because no one's properly drilled it. But
surely that's being investigated.
Well, I'll make a big prediction that the solution to Victoria's troubles of having some of the dirtiest coal-fired power stations in the world is within a decade you'll see all of those close down, or the big four, the two Loy Yangs, Yallourn and Hazelwood, will all be closed down within 10 years. And on the same sites, you'll see huge gas-fired power stations, all with subsidised gas, coal seam methane gas, coming out of the very same coal mines. And we'll have a massive reduction. We'll be world's best practice in terms of getting down our greenhouse gases, because we've got this huge gas supply and it's 60% less carbon emissions.
I was going to say, it's really exciting if that's the case. So if that is the case, so then when the gas comes out, can that be used in exactly the same way that the coal is used, or in a slightly different way, obviously, to produce the electricity? Or you won't actually produce electricity, you'll just use the gas and have sort of gas-fired homes?
It's gas-fired power stations generating electricity.
Right.
But the other beautiful thing about coal seam methane is that the process produces clean water. So all those brown coal stations down there in the Latrobe Valley were built with a zero price for water and a zero price for carbon. And they're both massively expensive on water and carbon, because brown coal is 60% water. Mm. So you drill down, you take out the gas, and then you produce clean water as a byproduct. And you can even actually process the carbon, the 20% carbon. You can even process that and export it. It's quite a process to do it. But there's a big chance, I know this is a bit revolutionary, but I know there are people in high places looking at this sort of stuff, and the view is starting to develop.
Fantastic. Maybe we should have been looking at it before this.
Well, that's right. You can take the 20-year view, which is carbon sequestration and clean coal and wind and all this stuff, but a lot of that's not going to be scalable for industrial use, base load. You know, we need 10 gigawatts a year in Victoria. We've got 5 gigawatts, which is dirty brown coal. So it's just, it's half our power.
Yes.
So the whole base load solution, I think long term, is going to be gas out of the valley.
Very interesting, because at one stage you did. I always wonder where you've got your little finger on what pulse there, Stephen. But I trust you, and in 5 years' time, I'll come back and I'll ask you, how did you know? What were your sources? Things that are making news apart from that revelation from Stephen Mayne today. Stephen, Macquarie Bank. They're always in the news. They're always moving in some direction.
They are everywhere. Well, today's their biggest day of the year, actually,
really?
Because they do a deluge on the market. At 8:30 this morning, they released about 350 pages of information, not just their profit, but also their annual report. Which
that's
of
almost
course,
as much as what I got in terms of the four pubs in Australia. That when these are the bits of, yes, but still, I'm just saying.
You've had a deluge on
I've
the pubs.
I've had a deluge of pubs.
And we've had a deluge on the Millionaires Factory this morning.
What
and,
did they say?
Well, I mean, I guess the perv interest is always the pay packets at Macquarie.
And I heard about this.
For the first time in 10 years, they are down.
But they're still very impressive.
Oh, they're still telephone numbers. But, the CEO, Alan Moss, has seen his pay drop from $33.5 million to $24.75 million.
Oh, dims.
So I think I would be correct in saying that is the biggest pay cut that anyone has ever taken in the history of Australian companies. I mean, imagine dropping $9 million. I mean, you've got to have nine to start with, I guess, don't
true.
You? So he's had the biggest drop ever. He's still at 24.75. Now, he's retiring on Friday night. Big farewell for him then. The last 5 years, his pay packet has been $107.12 million. So he's averaged about almost $22 million a year.
Do you hope he's donated to our appeal?
Well, I hope so. Well, actually, the Macquarie Foundation donated $17 million over the year. So they actually do
right.
a bit of charity. I mean, I know they do that for PR, but that's actually... I saw that number today. I thought that's actually a reasonable whack
yes,
for the millionaires to dish out.
Yeah, good.
But I guess when you've got 13,000 staff earning an average of $300,000 a year, which is the Macquarie stat, I guess they got a bit to... They can clip the ticket and come up with $17
million. Yes.
Pretty quickly when, the total staff costs at Macquarie were $4.12 billion for the year. So, look, the profit was up nominally for the year 23% to a record $1.8 billion. But that was the full year figure. And, of course, the whole credit crisis has been in the last little period. So the second half profit was actually down by 28% to $788 million. And the market always prices the shares on the forward outlook, and the new CEO, Nicholas Moore, came in, and I reckon this is a bit of an example of a new CEO always comes in and tries to paint the situation black and say the last guy stuffed it, and, So what they usually do is they write everything off and they come up with a bad profit figure. But because he wasn't doing the profit today, it was actually Alan Moss's last one.
Right.
We still had the big headline
yes.
figure of a 23% increase. So Nicholas Moore's impact on the share price is on the forward estimate. So this is the one sentence that he delivered today that caused a $1.4 billion collapse in the Macquarie Bank share price. And this is this, quote, "The current state of financial markets means that it will be challenging to repeat last year's record performance. But this may be achievable." So in other words, he's basically saying, don't hold your breath for us to keep this up. And the share price tanked 7.34%, knocking off a $1.4 billion. So it was interesting. When Alan Moss retired on February 6th, the share price tanked, or announced his retirement, the share price tanked 9% that day. And then it's recovered a bit. And then he delivers his farewell profit and it tanks 7.4% today. So it's all over the place. But I think
that really his official statement?
That was Alan Moss's...
this was the new...
Yeah, the new guy. Nicholas Moore. That was his
official statement today that he's released because yeah. it wasn't very well worded.
No, market conditions make short-term forecasting more difficult than usual. So, yeah.
That's fair enough. But then it goes on, but it might not. And just sort of this bizarre bit at the end.
Yeah.
As if he sort of went, but don't leave yet. It mightn't. It might be all right.
But what they all want to do is he wants to under-promise and over-deliver. So he wants to come out of next year, make $2 billion and say, well, I said it
but it's like he got to the end of that and suddenly went, oh, hang on a second, the share market will be collapsing. It's going to be okay. Don't worry too much.
Yeah. So I think they'll do it. But I still think Macquarie, it's a great story. I mean, they had no losses from the credit crunch. So, the likes of Bear Stearns have gone broke and Macquarie is actually producing a higher profit. And the one that really jumped out was that in the second half, their net trading income actually went up from $843 million to $1 billion. So they actually made money. They made more money trading in this unprecedentedly volatile environment. So they profited from it without copping $400 billion's been written off on subprime. And here's Macquarie doing all this smart trading and making extra profits from that. But interestingly, their net interest income is down in the second half from $523 million to $294 million. That reflects the credit crunch because they've got $24 billion of mortgages and they've basically shut down that business. They've said we can no longer source loans to feed all these home loans, so we're getting out of loans. And you can see it in those figures that their net interest income has tumbled. And equally, their profits from buying companies and selling them, like they made a massive profit last year buying Dyno Nobel, the big explosives company from the Scandinavians, and then floating on the Australian stock market. They made like $300 million or something out of that. And the profit in the second half from that division was only $29 million versus $810 million in the previous corresponding period. So you can see different parts of the business have collapsed or really hit trouble.
But the rest has bolstered
it. But the fact that they haven't taken straight, you know, subprime investment losses, and the fact that their trading income is up, I think just confirms that they are the smartest guys in the room and that they are a genuine Australian success story. I mean, they are now managing, their funds under management were up 18% to $232 billion. They have $18 billion of spare liquidity, so they are absolutely bulletproof, and they have $3 billion of excess cash. So
should they be running the country, Stephen?
Well, I think they're a bit heartless. I mean, they're pretty ruthless. You know, they love buying us.
Because that's all about money, and we want the country to be run in a slightly better way than that. Not better, but in terms of, you know, looking after those who are less fortunate than others.
Yeah, but we don't produce many great international companies. So, I mean, I know that you don't want to be a customer of Macquarie or a Counterparty. I mean, you don't want to be an airport customer in Sydney. You know, you get charged highest fees in the world. They're just too smart. If you're a government, don't go to Macquarie to negotiate a toll road deal because they'll clean you up every time. Because they're so smart. But be a shareholder, because they make a lot of money.
You heard it here second this afternoon, 5 to 6. Hello, Derek.
Lindy, don't be a shareholder, though. Be an executive.
Yeah. Well, I think it's harder to get that. I think it's probably easier to just get it for shares.
Oh, no, they should just take it in turns.
But imagine, you know, 15 years as the CEO, and he retires just because he's about to turn 60. And he should be on the BRW rich list, Mr. Alan Moss. So,
can he sleep at night?
Well, look, he's actually a really nice guy. You know, they're so bashful that in the 350 pages today of information, there was not one picture of a banker.
Well, they're scared.
They do not show their faces. They are literally the faceless millionaires factory. You will not find a picture of any of their bankers in any of their publications.
And in fact, there was a very interesting mob, the people in the different levels of the hierarchy. There are some remarkably generous and philanthropic individuals in some of the positions. And I can't speak for all of them, but a couple that I do know,
John Calden, who set up their infrastructure business, just donated his entire contemporary art collection to one of the galleries in Sydney, which is worth an estimate, I think, 30 or 40 million. Now, he'll probably get a nice tax deduction from that. But it is actually
donation, yes. We can all talk about the size of various wages, but if the people who are receiving those wages also have a sense of social responsibility, you're talking
that's
about
right,
how
yeah,
the country's run, and social justice has to be a part of
it. It has to be a part of it. It does. You're absolutely right. So that's probably why it's... Well, maybe Macquarie could do it.
There might be some greedy devils there too. I don't know.
It actually is. It's got to be balanced. A bit like the ABC.
Yeah.